Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together. Hello and welcome to another Shaping Portsmouth podcast with me, CEO Dave Humphreys, and today I am joined by Richard Hale, General Manager of the Spinnaker Tower. Welcome, Richard.
Morning, Dave. You well?
Yeah, I am. Good. So, been a big week for the Spinnaker Tower.
A big week.
20th anniversary, so happy birthday to you.
Thank
and
you very much.
All of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the tower itself. But before we get into that, I'm guessing that people will immediately guess from your accent that you're not a local Portsmouth boy.
I'm not a local Portsmouth boy, no. I think I consider myself a naturalised Overner now. I actually live on the Isle of Wight at the moment. I moved over there in 2018 and commute across every day with our good friends, either Hover Travel or White Link, and they make that commute very easy for me, so it's great.
Yeah, so where do you come from originally?
Originally, I'm West Yorkshire born and bred, Huddersfield, and that's where my family still is.
Right.
Regrettably, I don't get up as often as I would like to go and check in on the nephews and cause some havoc. But everybody's up there still.
So you've been general manager at the tower now for a year.
Yep.
Many people, I would imagine, will remember Tony from the tower.
Indeed,
Who moved on, but not too far, only to Gunwolf Keys.
He's a friendly neighbour now.
Yes. So that was the point you took over. But what does your journey to ending up as general manager of the tower look like?
Well, I've spent time in two or three different sectors throughout my sort of my career. I started in retail for my sins an awful long time ago. I spent nearly 15 years with Wilkinson Wilco, RIP.
Yeah.
When I left there, I was opening new stores and rebranding existing estate and things. So lots of sort of people skills and sort of marketing and event creation and that sort of stuff. And then went into heritage, really. I started volunteering at a family steam railway attraction in Huddersfield in 2013, and was immediately hooked on the heritage and the leisure and tourism aspect of all of that, and stuck with it. I managed to turn my volunteering into a paid role and made that into then a commercial manager role at the same venue. At the time, my partner had family on the Isle of Wight, and it was always an aspiration to move to the island. And it happened that a similar role, although on a much bigger scale, at the Isle of Wight Steam Railway came up. And that was that. The rest is history, really. We moved in 2018 to a commercial manager job at the Steam Railway. And of course, that was much bigger in terms of events and you know, the 150,000 visitors a year and that sort of stuff. Which was really, really exciting, and only came to an end because of the pandemic, sadly. And then it took a little while. Leisure and tourism, being as it is, took some time to recover and is probably still recovering from sort of pre-pandemic levels. But found myself now landed on my feet at Spinnaker Tower, and I wouldn't be anywhere else.
So, are you still a bit of a railway geek at heart? Or
I wouldn't like to admit it in public too often, but yes, I do like to have a visit to the steam railway every now and again, and catch up with old colleagues and taking that heritage of it as well. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, incredible things. So
absolutely,
yeah,
just the size of everything moving around, is what takes me sometimes.
So how have you found that transition through different sectors, sort of from retail into heritage and then to sort of more tourism and leisure?
I think what strikes me is the number of similarities in each of those sectors. So with it in retail, where everybody is very goal oriented, we've all got very strict targets and we're all managed by performance. And then you move into heritage, those targets still exist, they've just got a different name or maybe a different metric to measure them by. But what the point of difference between the two is probably the relationship with the visitors or the customers or the guests or whatever you want to turn the client, if you like.
Yeah.
Heritage is very much we must look after them. We must demonstrate what we can do, and we must encourage them to come back. Whereas in retail, it's a little bit more of a transactional relationship. And it's similar then again in leisure and tourism. It's a mixture of the two, probably.
Right.
We look after our guests, and there is obviously that commerciality to it as well.
I suppose obvious overlaps. Is there anything in regards to the tower that you found sort of a surprising challenge or different or, you know, not what you expected?
Well, I didn't know what to expect at all walking in the door on the first day, other than it is an iconic structure on the south coast. What strikes me the most is the amount of work that goes into operating the tower. Because of its unique structure, there is one lift that goes top to bottom. So logistically, events or different aspects of the day have to work in a very specific order. So there's a huge amount of planning goes into how do we create an exhibition? How do we put an event on for an organisation that allows them to express what they would like to do, but at the same time, how do we make that work around the logistics of the tower? So it's that for me that is the most unique part of it.
And I guess especially on a day-to-day basis, you've got some quite unique sort of moving parts involved in there. I mean, I suppose the reliance on the lift as a moving part being a big one, but it's not just people going up to look out from the viewing decks. It's the restaurant on the ground floor, the shop, the whole visitor experience. Then there's the cleaning and the maintenance. I'm guessing, you know, managing abseiling teams is probably a bit of a new one for you.
Yes, that's something I've never managed before. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And actually, managing they're a great team. So managing them is relatively straightforward. It's managing them with the weather.
Yeah.
And then with the task, or just organising a window clean for a special event, for example, can be logistically tricky. If the wind's gusting, we're not going outside to clean the windows.
Your own team that are doing that, or
it's a team we work closely with. We collaborate with Mountjoy and Portsmouth City Council. So it's sort of a tripartite agreement, and what work occurs when, and the schedule that's laid out. But we've got quite a good relationship, a very open relationship. So when a request comes in, we can talk about it quite openly.
Yeah. That's interesting stuff. And then, of course, on the abseiling side, you've got people doing that as an experience.
As an experience, yeah. So that's a different team of people. Yeah. We have a third party that come in that are skilled in that area for us. Hat Adventures work alongside us for that one, with some of our team members on the guest services side of things. And we've seen in the 20 years, 50,000 people abseil down the side of the tower. And we know that's raised over £1 million for good causes. And a lot of that money has stayed in the city as well. It was very interesting to see the list of local charities that have benefited from that, which is just extraordinary, really, that people will go to those lengths.
Last year, we were asked if I'd be willing to abseil down for Solent Mind, and the beauty of being CEO is I can delegate these tasks.
Absolutely.
So Steph abseiled for Solent Mind.
I'm becoming under more and more pressure to have a go next year.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. As general manager, I think it's within my gift to delegate that one as well. I think you're right.
Definitely. But it's quite impressive stats, and I'm quite sure it was quite recently I saw the publicity around the 50,000th abseil. That was only a recent thing.
Yes, that's
it?
Right. So it was September time.
Yeah.
And we reached out to local outlets, and the BBC picked it up, actually. So we ended up really fortunately having national coverage of that 50,000th abseil, and it went out across BBC Breakfast. On the national network, presenter went and did the 50,000th abseil. And it was some great coverage, and it really demonstrated what the tower is actually, because everybody was so keen to see it and put it on telly.
And I mean, we'll kind of come on to that. I suppose the bit of the tower as a Portsmouth icon and what people locally can do at the Tower in a bit. But as we're on the subject of abseiling, it's not the case that you have to be part of an organised, sponsored abseil. People can actually just turn up and do it, can't they?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, so a lot of the abseil that goes on is organised through charities, but there's no reason why an individual can't purchase that experience. And it's one of those, you can visit the website and select it as if you were purchasing an admission ticket.
Yeah.
There are a few sort of minimum criteria in terms of age and some other statistics and things, but there's no reason why any individual can't do it.
And is that a seasonal thing? Do you just sort of run it through the summer?
To be seasonal, because of the restrictions on the wind in particular. It generally runs April to October.
Having just wandered down here, I think I wouldn't want to be abseiling today.
Not today, thank you. No,
definitely not. But no, it's great, and one of those things. Up until recently, I didn't realise that was the case at all. I thought it was only those organised charity ones, and I didn't. In fact, I happened to be stood at the front when someone was sort of purchasing their abseil, and I think they were having the debate with their other half around whether he was going to do it as well or not.
There is a lot of that in the admissions area when people come to sign in. Are you going to do it too, dear? No, dear. I think you should. I'd really like you to.
So, 20 years old.
20, yeah.
So, big anniversary this weekend. Great party on Saturday night. So, Saturday was actually the anniversary day, wasn't it?
That's right, yes. So the
anniversary 18th, of the opening.
That's right. 18th of October, Saturday, just gone, was the anniversary of the opening day itself in 2005, yeah.
Why do you think that the anniversary of the Tower is such a significant moment?
I think the Tower has been on, it's a bit cliched, isn't it? The Tower's been on quite a journey in those 20 years. We can't not acknowledge it was a difficult start to life. There were issues around the construction and the financing of things, which are very well documented. But I think what we need to mention, what we need to make note of, and what we need to celebrate are the differences to the city that the Tower has made over those 20 years. You know, it is synonymous now with Portsmouth. You can't search Portsmouth without seeing the Tower on any particular part of literature, or you know, the images come straight up in an online search and things. Yeah. Everybody uses it in their literature. I would just wish I could market that somehow. I just can't.
Yeah.
But it would be lovely, and I think that's what we need to celebrate. But the good the Tower has done, and for the city, including you know the fundraising and things that's happened.
Yeah, and it's something that I'd completely forgotten about really until you mentioned it to me the other day when we were doing the covenant signing.
Sure.
And I remember seeing it being built, because at the point the Tower was being built, I was living in Southsea and working at Gosport and getting the ferry across every day. So I was kind of seeing it in stages from the water, which was nice. But I remember it opening, and I can remember all the furore around, you know, is this a good use of taxpayers' money? But you just cannot imagine the city without it now. It is so synonymous with Portsmouth, to the point where, you know, you would expect to see it in the background on sort of, you know, TV. And in fact, is it Jonathan Ross has it on the back of the set, isn't it? On the Jonathan Ross show. So it features everywhere. And if you Google Portsmouth, it's one of the first things that comes up.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how that has changed, but it's also, as you say, it's been quite a journey over time in terms of other things like the sponsorship and the controversy around painting it different colours.
Yep. There was a Tower Ever Red story is one that comes up quite regularly. When the corporate deal with Emirates first started, of course, their corporate colours were red. And that was the intention, but the red paint was even purchased.
Yeah.
You know, it was sitting in the store and ready to go. But quite rightly, the people managing the Tower at the time listened to the public, listened to the locals, to Portsmouth, and it stayed blue.
Yeah. Yeah, blue and yellow was far more locally relevant.
Absolutely,
kind of scheming.
Quite right.
It's funny, we did in 2024, we did a Shaping Portsmouth April Fool's post around opening our Southampton office. And we were debating doing a post this year. And we put into ChatGPT, design us an April Fool's Day post involving rivalry between Portsmouth and Southampton. And ChatGPT threw back Southampton sponsor Spinnaker Tower, which tower to be painted red and white. And we just thought, no, it's already been done, that one. We've been there. But yeah, so lots going on. Is the tower still sponsored? Is there still a sponsor?
It's not currently sponsored at all now. And that's so that the tower is owned by Portsmouth City Council.
Yep.
So those agreements would run through the council. And I work for Heritage Projects Portsmouth, who operate the tower essentially. So that agreement would run through the council, and we'd facilitate it. Yeah, but I'm sure it's available if anybody wants to put the hand in the pocket and have their name down the tower.
Yeah, yeah, probably can be done. And I think there were quite a lot of people that were probably quite glad when it was repainted white.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of. And it's funny, I suppose, going back to all of that, how people felt about it being built in the first place, then the anger at, like, you're changing the colour, it's always been white, we like to see it white, that's what's associated with Portsmouth. You think, right, okay, you've claimed that ownership of the tower as a city already quite significantly. There obviously must be some sort of regime around repainting it. Because I remember obviously seeing the blue and the yellow paint go on. I remember seeing the Absailors up there painting it white again over a number of weeks.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing that there are times when there are people up there repainting.
Absolutely, yeah. That falls into the maintenance agreement that the Absailors will fulfil with the council and ourselves together. But yeah, that maintenance routine. The cliche is a little bit like painting the fourth bridge, isn't it? You start at the top, and by the time you get to the bottom, you've got to start again. Mm. And that's generally how it works, whether that be with the painting of the building or the maintenance of the ribs and the structure around it and so on. But yeah, it's a huge piece of work just to keep on top of that maintenance side of things.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the Saturday saw the main
event,
the birthday party,
birthday,
if you like. And plenty of champagne flowing, absolutely wonderful night. It was great to be up there. I do have to say, actually, outstanding dinner jacket.
Thank
I don't
you.
Know where you got that, but I think that was the talk of the night, how good your tux was.
It's going to be a closely guarded secret.
yeah. but no, really great group of people that sort of represented every aspect of the city that you had there. And obviously the drinks reception at the top with the view with the city in darkness, and then wonderful meal downstairs, some great speeches yourself and obviously something that I wasn't expecting, but CP, some people will know, some people won't, CP Robinson from the Cathedral and or Portsmouth Pride Trust, depending on which way you want to look at him, gave the speech. Why did you ask CP to speak particularly?
I think it was important to me to recognise the contribution that the tower can make to that third sector. Mm. We know that we can host a great corporate deal. We know that we can... we can take in very high level executives, and they can present their next year's business plan or whatever it is to their audience. I think what's important to me is that the tower is very much, and increasingly so, part of the community. It isn't just a building, it isn't just a structure on the south coast. It's part of Portsmouth, and we want it to be that increasingly so. So I asked CP to speak and just give the audience a taste of the kind of work we can do together and the benefits of that, whether that is fundraising specifically or whether it's a launch night, for example, when we launched Portsmouth Pride, City of Pride last year, or whether it's just awareness, for example. You know, we can illuminate the tower in almost any colour, and that's available to anybody, you know, within some guidelines. You know, it's important to me that we recognise that, because for me that's just as important as the commerciality of the tower as well.
Yeah, and I think that really came across well, and it's, you know, it goes back to that point you made earlier about the abseils and how much of that money has stayed in the city, because the list of those charities that were spoken about made that really, really obvious. But there was some great stuff, and it was good to see some of the older stuff, the pictures and the stuff that had been put up, some of the facts and figures. And, you know, there were things that I knew about, like the amount of abseils, 560 steps and the 23-mile view, all of that. So I didn't know, this was my fact of the week that I learned through your anniversary. I didn't know that the glass floor can hold two rhinos.
That's right.
Rather a random one. Not quite sure how you found that out.
I think that was in the designer's arithmetic. I think it was in the structural engineer. It's not something we made up, but it's a fascinating one, isn't it? That one, and it's that glass floor has stood for 20 years as it is, and goodness knows how many people have crossed it. We know that people have conquered their fear of heights by walking the glass floor, and it's very interesting watching people decide whether or not they're going to tackle it. Often it's young children that will just skip across, no problem at all. And babies will crawl across it.
Yeah.
And it's those people that have got that little risk factor in their imagination, you know, but there isn't anything underneath me.
Yeah.
But no, it's great. It's a great thing to have, actually, and it's good to watch.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's 1.8 3 tons was the figure.
That's about right.
It was on there. Yeah. Incredible stuff. But it was good at the end of the evening to go up to the Clouds Cafe, the cocktail bar,
the Sky Bar.
Bar. And was that was an anniversary cocktail we had?
We had it was a spinach sour cocktail, which is on the specials menu, I guess. But our mixologists are brilliant. I can't sing their praises enough. So we have a sort of a standard menu of existing cocktails, and then every now and again we'll bring in seasonal specials, and the spinach sour one is one of those.
And it's great reminder that deck is actually there, because it's really easy just to go up and down in the lift and forget there's two more decks
indeed
above the main view.
And that the Sky Bar, but into the evening and into the night, and the way that space changes as the light outside changes is my absolute favourite part of the tower. It's my favourite place to be after dark in the Sky Bar there, with the music playing and the view, just sort of the twinkling lights outside, and you can sort of see the city go by. It's a wonderful, and it's a very reflective space to be, actually, whether you're drinking cocktails or not.
And then I mean, that was just one element of the anniversary for you. I'm guessing for not just for yourself, but the whole team, it's been quite a busy fortnight, really, I suppose.
It really has, The party on Saturday night was probably the icing on the cake, if you like. But what was more important to all of us was what we could do for our guests, for our visitors, to help us celebrate. So we worked with Portsmouth City News, asking people to share their memories of the tower. So we were regaled with, you know, tales of engagements and special occasions up and down the tower. We were sent hundreds of photos that we'd never seen before of the tower from different perspectives, which has been really, really lovely to see. And then we ran a very simple price promotion over the weekend. So we went back to 2005 admission prices, and we saw just under 2,500 people visit over those 3 days, Friday to Sunday, for the anniversary.
And so how did the price compare with current?
So our existing admission all-day ticket is $18.50 for an adult, and over the weekend it was $5.95,
which was the
2005 prices. And what that told me, what that really illustrated, was that there's a real appetite to visit the tower, and what we perhaps need to work on is how we communicate the value of that visit at 2025 prices. Because when the tower first opened, it was a simple view deck. There was a cafe on the ground floor, and that was about it. There was the viewing deck, and now there is so much more to a visit to the tower. That is, you know, we tell the story of 2,000 years of history in Portsmouth from the moment you step through the door with our a pre-show animation, a film that sort of starts telling the tale. And then as you rise to the view deck, there is all the view is interpreted in front of you that tells the tale of those years of history. And I think that's what we need to get across more to people, that there's so much more than just looking out of the window.
Yeah, definitely. And it's quite interesting, and it was something we were talking about Saturday night, actually, that whole tower visitor experience, because there will be people listening that have been to towers all around the world, and, you know, like the Eiffel Tower, and particularly you go to places like New York, and you've got the One World now, and Empire State, and Top of the Rock, all very, very different experiences. But there is actually an International Federation of Towers, isn't there?
There is the World's Federation of Great Towers, and we're fortunate to be a member.
Well, I would hope so.
Absolutely.
Absolutely one of the world's great towers. So, but do you find yourselves looking at tower experience best practice around the world?
In short, yes. There is an annual conference of the Federation. My marketing manager, Rain, was over in Barcelona in September at the conference. It's the first time we've been able to go for a little while. So she was sitting among executives from, from the New York Towers, from Barcelona, from Kuala Lumpur, and everybody is sharing their experience of how they best cater for their guests, for their visitors, and it was a real opportunity to share some best practice, and so some of the work that we'll do this coming year is very much based on the work that is happening around the world. In terms of that view interpretation and visitor experience and things like that.
So I suppose looking forward in that respect, then, what does the immediate future for the tower hold? What are your plans?
In the short term, let me go back a little bit. We started at the beginning of this year reflecting on what the tower is, and what we would like the tower to be to our guests, to our visitors. And we've decided on a new direction for the brand, and that will be hopefully just the other side of Christmas. We'll start to see the creative that's come from that. So new colours, new campaigns, new logo, and that sort of stuff, which I think is what people understand sometimes to be a brand. But for us, it's much deeper than that. We want to reestablish what the tower is to the city. So we want to make sure people understand that the tower is an experience, but it's also a reflective space. It's also an event space. It's also somewhere you can spend a good part of your time if you wish to. All of the tickets are all-day tickets now, so you could come along in the morning and experience the view, understand some part of history, and then, you know, spend your day as you wish, come back a little bit later on and see a completely different view out of the window. And that's a difficult message to communicate to people sometimes.
Yeah, and again, you know, I'll be the first to admit that until you told me that a little while ago, I didn't know that at all. Actually, I kind of just thought it was a ticket you went in when you left, and that was the end of it. The photographer in me particularly knows how important light is and how much it changes a landscape. And, you know, your view early morning is going to be very different to your mid-afternoon view.
Absolutely. Even this morning, actually, I was up on the view deck for a short time, And it's very grey, very windy.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there was a break in the cloud and just one extraordinary shaft of sunlight around sort of the middle of the solar as I was looking at it. And then 5 minutes later, that's gone. And I think that's what we struggle to get across to people is that that experience is there. And it can be quite extraordinary to see how the view changes from time to time.
Yeah, definitely. So the local visitation and that I suppose the community resource that the tower is probably at the heart of what you're trying to get across moving forward.
Absolutely, yeah. So obviously Portsmouth attracts a good number of tourists, whether they be domestic tourists or coming from further afield through the cruise port or whatever. But what's important to me is that the tower is the centre of the community. Mm. Everybody knows it, everybody can see it. And I don't think everybody within the community understands or knows that the best value ticket to come to the tower belongs to those residents in the PO postcode. So there are quite substantial discounts available to anybody with a PO postcode to get their admission to the tower. It's the best price ticket available anywhere, including sort of some of those third party experience sellers and things. You won't find it anywhere any cheaper anywhere than through us if you're a PO resident.
Mm. And great tip for residents to make sure they check that out rather than just assuming that it's the full price. But of course you mentioned the visitors to the city and one of the things that we do at Shaping, which you and the team are very heavily involved in, is our cruise passenger meet and greets. And in fact, Paul often volunteers at the port and is involved in that.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things we've seen is especially with the increased use of the water taxi, bringing cruise passengers straight from the port into the sort of into the quay at Gun Wharf, they're now getting off with the tower directly in front of them, and it's often becoming the first port of call of those visitors now when they come into the city, which is great because they get to see it as they enter on the ship.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So as the cruise ships come into the harbour, of course, we're immediately there, aren't we? And it does cause some interest, I believe, listening to some of the passengers, the visitors. But when the cruise liners use the water taxi to bring passengers straight into the marina, we do great things with them, and it's great that. Our relationship with Gun Wharf is such that we can work alongside them to welcome those passengers ashore. We help direct them, wherever they wish to be, if they're, if they're shopping, or if they want to, they're looking for the experience of the tower. And that's thanks to you at Shaping, really, the work that goes into that to bring everybody together to collaborate on that front. Because if it's good for me at the tower, it's good for the city wider than just those in Gun Wharf.
Mm. And obviously, as we said, you are synonymous. The tower's synonymous with the city. So having you as a Shaping patron is great because of that. You're also quite synonymous with Gun Wharf, I guess, as well. And there may be many people that don't realise that you don't actually belong to Gun Wharf as such. You're not owned by Landsec, who own and operate Gun Wharf. But it is great to have you as part of the Shaping Portsmouth community working on some of the things that we're really passionate about. You've already mentioned the Pride launch last year and the involvement of the tower in that UK Pride piece. You've obviously spoken about all of the sort of community fundraising and the abseiling stuff. But through Shaping Portsmouth, you're involved in quite a lot as well. And one of the big ones this year will be the Shaped by Solent programme.
Absolutely, yeah.
And obviously, I don't know whether we've formally announced it publicly anywhere yet or not, but plenty of people do know that this year's brief is to make a product for the centenary. So we have we now have 14 teams of special educational needs students at 7 different schools or colleges, all working on that. And the eventual winning item is going to be sold in your gift shop.
I think this is exclusive, isn't it? Yeah, you're absolutely right, Dave. Yeah, it's been a fabulous start to the project for me. I'm involved with Harbour School and a group of learners there, and their creativity and their enthusiasm for doing something new, creating a product that's actually got to go on sale somewhere, is really extraordinary. Yeah. And I'm thrilled to be involved in the project from on a personal level, but to be able then to take that winning project, the winning product, and pop it on sale in the Spinnaker Tower shop will be quite a moment for me. I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to put any of the other competitors, is that the right word? Any of the other schools and colleges off, perhaps, but the product we've got coming out of Harbour School is going to blow everybody out of the water. So yeah. I'm very confident.
Yeah. So what I didn't realise, and we knew how we wanted to grow the programme. We knew that to make that work across other establishments in the city, we would have to bring in some more mentors from our business community. I didn't quite anticipate how much rivalry.
It's that friendly that would, rivalry at
that
the
would
moment.
Generate. Competition is getting fierce, definitely. So that will be, as always, a big highlight of the conference in January. And it will be good to have you on stage then when we do that.
Absolutely. And, I wouldn't miss it.
Introduce that. We could talk about the tower for hours. There is just so much to it. The opportunities, especially for that, you know, for the Portsmouth community to engage and make more use of the tower themselves, and other things that you've already alluded to, like the lights being available, and in fact, is there a schedule of how the tower's going to be lit up anywhere?
So the default lighting is Pompey blue, so that's what you'll see most evenings. But the illumination is available for individuals to book, for charities to book, and all that information is on the website. There is a quite a hefty discount for charitable organisations to light up. And there's a few guidelines that we've got to work within alongside Portsmouth City Council and so on. But generally speaking, the tower illumination is available to raise awareness of good causes.
There's certainly lots of those what I would call social media days, but sort of special occasion days where you switch the tower to different lighting schemes.
Absolutely. And we had, for example, the Baton of Hope, where it was in the city, wasn't it, very recently. And so the tower was lit to mark the day and to raise awareness of the cause. And that's possible for many different causes.
Yeah. And people may not realise that is accessible to them. They can book it. You even do... Gender reveals.
So I think we've done about 30 in the last sort of 12 months or so. And what's really lovely at the gender reveals, if you're anywhere near the tower when one goes through, it's quite dynamic. The lights are sort of do a bit of a show and flash and things. And then there's that pregnant pause, pun intended, and then the tower will light up related to the gender, and then wherever you are, there is always a cheer. Yeah. You can hear it around the tower. Wherever people are celebrating, there's always those screams and cheers when the final gender is revealed. It's a lovely thing to do.
Brilliant. But obviously, on top of that, the other one we've mentioned is Clouds Cafe. That's available, as is the viewing deck. It's all event space that people can hire, isn't it?
And it's a great space to use. Actually, so. We talked about the logistics being difficult earlier, in that there is one lift to move product and people and equipment up and down, but the space is very flexible. So if people are looking for event space, the view decks, you know, can be a stunning place to meet people, and then Clouds Cafe or Sky Bar, however you wish it to be, is a slightly smaller space, more intimate. but really high quality as well. Yeah. So yeah, also the tower as a whole or individual spaces are available to hire.
We did our partners networking there last year downstairs. And you know, whilst people might think of that as the cafeteria by day, by night that can be completely different. And we had it as a sort of open plan space. But as we saw on Saturday, formal dining, absolutely fantastic. It's such a versatile building.
Indeed, that's the space downstairs. Yeah, as you say, formal dining Saturday. It can be a ballroom dance floor if you wish it to be. Mm. It can be, you know, a conference space. We had just under 300 people in there for a conference style in the summer. Yeah. So yeah, we can do almost anything you would like to do with it. Yeah.
Amazing, really good stuff. So, we always like to finish our podcasts with a bit of a recommendation or a top tip from our guest of somewhere to go or something to do in Portsmouth.
Okay.
Now, obviously, the obvious one for you would be the Spinnaker Tower, so I'm not going to let you have that.
Okay, that seems fair.
We're going to bar you from that one, as we've spoken about it enough. But is there somewhere you like to go, something you like to do in Portsmouth?
So, yes. For me, not being a resident of Portsmouth and commuting in every day, what I've found about Portsmouth is the amount of collaboration between businesses and sectors is on a different level to anywhere else I've ever worked. It's absolutely extraordinary. But what's beneath all of that is the history of Portsmouth. Mm. And I think perhaps it all leads down that avenue. So what I really enjoy doing is to walk out of the tower and walk through old Portsmouth. And I head sort of towards the seawall and Hot Walls and the Round Tower, the Square Tower. And every time I step out and head that way, I will learn something new, whether that be on a blue plaque or, you know, some information on the wall somewhere. And for me, that's what's great about Portsmouth is the richness of the perhaps the 2,000 years of history. And I think that would be my recommendation. If you do nothing else, walk along explore old Portsmouth and see what the city's founded on.
And I suppose first and foremost, something you can see quite clearly from the tower.
Quite, yes, that's true as well. Yes, yeah.
But secondly, if you're struggling to find out where to go, you just follow the Millennium Walk from the tower.
Yeah, that's right.
And it will take you straight to the Hot Walls and along there. And you know, as part, especially the sea defence work that's been done along there, just past the Hot Walls on the along the moat area, there's some amazing work that's been done. It's all beautiful up there now. So yeah, really lovely place to go. Tons of history in old Portsmouth. Some of our historian ambassadors, Portsmouth ambassadors, operate their walking tours in that area, and I think every time I talk to them, I'd learn something new about old Portsmouth.
Exactly,
I didn't know.
Yeah,
so much. Such an interesting place. Really good shout. Like, do like that one. But it's absolute pleasure chatting to you, Richard. Again, you know, happy birthday to you and all the team. And I think it was great to see everyone Saturday, and particularly some of those staff members that you had there that have been there since the very opening,
right at the very beginning,
that you know, been there for the full 20 years. So yeah, really special occasion for those staff members, I'm sure. But for anyone listening that hasn't been up the tower recently, or indeed at all, because there are still local people that say, "Oh yeah, I've never been up there."
Absolutely, yeah.
It is the cheapest prices for those PO residents. Get your ticket, get up there. Yep. And much like I always say with the historic quarter and the historic dockyard, if you really want good value, buy an annual pass.
That's right.
Even cheaper still.
Even cheaper still.
And you can go up all year as much as you like.
You can. 40 quid is an annual pass. Yeah. An actual annual pass will get you a discount in the retail shop and the cafe as well.
Yeah.
So even better value.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks for coming in.
Not at all. My pleasure.
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space. and Portsmouth Community Lottery.